So, the the mind is actually a pretty complex thing. It's got a lot of different regions to it. Probably the most the region we most identify with and depend upon for a sense of control, for a sense of security, is the, in most cases, the left frontal hemisphere, which is the part of the brain associated with linguistic functioning, literary functioning, concepts. The right side is the spatial pattern, more artistic. The left side, though, is the thing that has literal meanings. It's the part of the brain that makes statements about our experience. It's for ease, I'm just going to refer to it as the conceptual mind. You can think of, sometimes Buddhists call it the little ego, the small I, the whatever it is that is making and generating constant language, ideas, concepts. Think of that as the conceptual mind. And it's the part of the mind that wants to figure out our experience and come away with a lesson. It's the part of the mind that walks away from experience with that was good or that was bad. When I was a kid, my mom hated children's movies. She once tried to take me with one and gave up midway and yanked me out of it. And from that point on, it was European art films for me. And she was an Upper West Side Jew, very, very well acquainted with the sacrifices that motherhood took on her, and she was not afraid of exacting her toll now and then by making me accompany to her to films that I had no way of comprehending. And I remember she took me to see Stanley Kubrick's 2001 when I was a child when it came out, and I would immediately yank my mom's hand and say, you know, what did that mean? What did that mean? Because that's what the brain does, the mind does. It wants to know what things mean. And she would say, when it was like a, if it wasn't like an obvious piece of crap, if it was a film that was really difficult and weighty and profound, she would say, I don't know. You have to let me think about it. I don't know. But that conceptual mind doesn't like, it wants to know now. It wants to have a meaning. It wants to say this, you know, French food is heavy, you know, Asian food is whatever, not heavy, I don't know what the fuck it is, you know, and it's, you know, we're in America, we're taught freedom, democracy, good, you know, feudalism, despotism, bad. You know, we have all these concepts that we're inoculated with, and then our families give us concepts. Hard work, good. You know, and if you're, sometimes these concepts differ. You know, Mitt Romney, freedom of trade, good. Me, you know, from Upper West Side contingent, we're like, no, regulation, good. So we all have these concepts that help us make sense of the world. They're maps that help us keep track of which people we're going to trust and what experiences we're going to go back to and what experiences we're going to avoid and what we think we should be careful and what we think is worthwhile. And all these maps we carry around, these concepts of the world, the thing about them is for them to be portable, you know, they have to be really, really simple. They have to be really, really, really simplistic. Because we can't carry around, you know, if we want to have a mind that has it all figured out, and that's what we all want, is a mind that's got it all figured out. If we want that experience of being in control and having it all figured out, then all these little concepts have to be really portable and simple. That person, bad. This person, good. This job, I hate. That roommate, pain in the ass. This roommate, you know, this takeout joint, bad. Whatever. You get the idea. And so we generally gravitate towards concepts, ideas, views, and opinions, as the Buddha called it. We generate the views and opinions that don't allow for change, don't allow for inconsistency, don't allow for exceptions, don't allow for surprises. You know, we have our favorite restaurants. We always want them to be good. We're really thrown about if they suddenly are bad. We don't ever want to go to that place that once, you know, brought the sort of half-heated food. You know, we want to have a map of the world, of other people, that's very consistent. Because if we have to allow for change, then suddenly all of our maps of reality become really complex. You know, we have to carry around the statement, well, this restaurant's sometimes good, sometimes bad. Sometimes when they do this food, it's okay, but when they do the other dish, I don't like it as much, and I do that, then blah, 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 blah. Can we carry around that for everything, for every person, for every event, for every, you know, director's movie we're going to see, for any, you know, experience we're going to go through? No. So we gravitate to really simple, clear, you know, give me a little short sentence for everything so that I can file it away and I know what it means. And of course, you've jumped there already. That's not the way life works. But we love the control and the power and the sense that we've got it figured out. So we keep gravitating towards these really simple views on people. That's why when somebody that we like suddenly doesn't show up for us, it's such a horrible thing, because it's thrown out our map of them. And then we have to go through and rebuild a map of who this person is. I thought you were the person that was going to show up for me. Suddenly you didn't. Now you fucked everything up. I have to go through all this rethinking about who you are and filing you away, and this is a mess. We don't like it when people are inconsistent. We don't like it at all. We like the control of having a bunch of little portable little statements about everything so that we feel we know what it's all about. That we're protected, we're safe, we're secure. Of course, then what happens is life bites us on the fucking ass. Guess what? You get broken up with. You get fired suddenly from a job. Somebody we love suddenly dies. A million things out of the blue can suddenly happen. And then, what the fuck? Suddenly, the entire, it's not just the little maps, but everything seems thrown up in the air. And the mind rushes in. And it wants to tell us what this huge experience means immediately, like me when I was a kid with my mom, the mind immediately jumps in because it knows that we're in pain, it knows that we're confused, it knows that somebody or some relationship or some job or some career that we depended on is no longer there, and it wants to come to our rescue and come up with the little simple statement that will make it all go away, that will make us feel in control again. And guess what? It doesn't work. The big experiences in life, there is no way for us to have a simple statement or even a paragraph that will make it make sense. Loss doesn't make sense. Loss is an experience of pain, of deprivation, of somebody once they're not being there. It has no statement to it that will make it make sense. But the mind doesn't like that. So it keeps going in. And funnily enough, we can even see this experience with other when we're relating to other people who have gone through losses. You ever see somebody who's just lost a parent and people rush in and they immediately want to say the thing that will make them stop being so upset. Because we really don't like the feelings. We want to go back to the simple statement. So we say, oh, he lived a long life. He's in a better place right now. Like, how the fuck would you know where you don't. But it's amazing how we rush in and we want to make people who are, you know, we want to make suffering go away, whether it's in somebody else or in ourselves. We want it gone. And the way we do it is by trying to find the simple statement that we can go to in place of feeling the feelings, feeling the feeling tones, feeling the sense of emptiness in the chest and stomach, the feeling of hollowness, the feeling of nausea, the feeling of the slight headache, the feeling of confusion. We don't like not knowing what it means. Why? Because not knowing what it all means, what loss means, that opens us up to vulnerability. Because if we don't know what it means, if we don't have that protective little meaning, that protective little saying, then we don't know how to, we don't feel we can protect ourselves from it happening again. So we really want that meaning. And we really want that meaning because we don't want to feel. We don't want to feel and open up to a very long, unpredictable process, which is grieving. Grieving and loss and change and disappointment. They don't have a timetable. They don't have a message. They don't have a meaning. They don't have a clock to them. They are processes that occur in the body and outside of the conceptual mind. They happen in the mind's level of energy. They happen in the way we hold our body. They happen in the way we breathe. They happen in just this feeling of a whole feeling tone of sadness and heaviness. So when the mind, the conceptual mind, sees this, all this, this suffering, this sadness, this inescapable, the Buddha said, this is the first noble truth. There is loss. There is old age. There is separation. There is rejection. There is death. So this is unavoidable. But the mind, the whole point of the conceptual mind is that it doesn't want us ever to feel discomfort. It wants us to live a life free of any discomfort. It wants us to be the exception to the rule. It wants us to be in control. It wants us to have the little thing, the little saying that can protect us from in every situation so we know what to do so we won't get hurt. And of course, it doesn't work, but rather than get the message, it keeps jumping up. Eventually, when it sees that it's not going to find a little statement right now to make it all go away. It jumps to the next stage, which is diversion. Oh, look at that TV set. You know, oh, look at that, you know, I just got broken up with last week, so I'm just going to get laid immediately, so I won't have to think about it. I can make the pain go away. You know, or, oh, look at that beer. I know I don't act great when I get drunk, but fuck it, or whatever. We see that we can't figure it out right now. We can't make it go away. All the pithy little slogans that people are throwing at us are falling flat. So then we look for the diversions, and for a while we might try to get caught up in addictive behavior, and then at the end of that process, still there's a feeling of emptiness, still there's this feeling of, hopefully there is, if we've completely ground it down, then it'll come out in a whole bunch of completely distorted ways. But if we're lucky, we can still be in touch with the feelings of loss. And then the final thing we do, rather than feel the feelings, rather than experiencing the body tones of loss and change, is we do my favorite, which is the give up, which is, well, I'm never going to be in a relationship again. Fuck this. That's the message. Fuck you. I know you're going to hurt me. Fuck all of you. It's just basically, that's the fun. You know. Fuck all of you. You know, it's like the big lower lip. And, you know, I'm like, that's the last time I ever date. That's the last time I ever get a job. That's the last time I ever, you know, I'm just gonna be a homeless person from now on. And all of these stages, the desperately trying to figure it out, the diversions, the giving up, they're all a masquerade that keeps us from just simply going through it, which is basically a process that has no conceptual description. It's a being with, it's a giving attention to, it's a bearing witness to just how we feel in the moment. It's a not feeling the need when we're with somebody who's going through loss to change what they're going through. It's not feeling that we have the responsibility of cheering up. It's not fitting ourselves into a timetable. It's an opening up to something that does not have a timetable, that does not have a message that we can convey to people, that doesn't have a meaning we can walk away with. And you can know when in life we've short-circuited the process, because that's when we come away with the really dramatic meanings. The, you know, I'm just never going to do that again. That means we haven't gone through the feelings, because when we've short-circuited the process and the mind has jumped in, it wants a simple rule to make the feelings go away. But when we've truly processed something, the loss of a relationship, the loss of a career, the loss of somebody we loved, there is no thing that we can walk around with and say, well, what did it all mean? There is no meaning. As one great monk I've studied with said, we learn more from letting go and forgetting our little morals than we ever learn from them. It's the putting down of the need to understand and have a solid meaning to experience, and instead just go into it. Another monk I studied with said, the concepts and the descriptions and the meanings that we give are like the menu to a dinner. If somebody says, how was the dinner? You don't hold the menu up in front of them and say, that's how it was. You know, it was braised trout with broccoli on the side. They're like, that's just a description. In fact, you really can't convey what it tasted like, really, or what the experience was like. And you can't even judge immediately what it's like until you've fully digested it. You fully sat with it. And even then, you don't know how to truly convey it. So, the good news is that we can prepare ourselves by, in our practice, we practice each time we meditate, we practice observing, feeling tones. We practice inviting the parts of the body that are willing to relax, to relax. And this is really important because when we're going through a really, really painful experience, or loss, or grieving, parts of our physical experience are that sadness. In my case, it might be a hollowness in the chest. But then there are other parts of the body that are reacting to the pain and trying to push it away. They're reacting to the fact that I'm sad, and they're sort of getting stressed out. I'm stressing against the sadness. So there's other parts of me that are just tensing. And so I've noticed with practice that each time I go in to a meditation during a difficult time, the parts of the body I invite to relax that are the reaction, they soften. But the part that doesn't, the part that resists, that clenches, that stays tight, that's the deeper feeling that needs to be sat with and given attention. As you deepen your practice, it becomes clearer and clearer what is a deep feeling of loss that's attached to old, old, old sadnesses, and what's just that I don't want to feel this way in the body and in the mind. And you'll learn that the reactions fall away the more we give them permission, the more we feel safe in a meditation. But the real feelings, if we open to them, will be there. They don't get relaxed away. They don't just get pushed away. They stay. And then what we do is we sit with this hollowness or this feeling of nausea or this feeling of tightness in the jaw, wherever it's manifesting, and we just say, you have permission. You have permission. You don't have to go away. And often what happens then is very old sadnesses come up. Feelings of never being secure in relationships, never being taken care of. And when that happens, then we can truly begin to give attention and awareness to all the pains that we've never really truly attended to. So that's what processing is all about. It's not about finding a nice little statement that will sound profound. Yes, I found that life's short and you gotta smell the roses. It's not about anything that you can make a nice presentation to your friends. If anything, the true learning is never going to be in anything you can say. It's just going to be an experience. And then it will teach you experientially rather than through a nice little statement. For example, if we really lose a relationship, it's painful and we go through it, the next time we go into a relationship, we're a little slower. And we're not going to throw as much of our life into that basket as we did before. And we're not going to trust the idea that it's going to solve everything in the rest of our lives. Because we've experienced the fact that nothing is guaranteed. So we're less likely to jump in. But we don't have to have that guardedness as a statement in our mind. We don't have to carry it around as a concept. It will be there. It will be there. And the way it is lodged in our experience is by giving witness to the feelings of loss, not the stories. So I hope you got something out of that. I thank you for listening. And now is your turn to ask anything or share anything that tonight's talk brought up. And I'm now going to...